This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Israel on Wednesday stepped up security at its embassies around the world and warned citizens to be on alert after Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh was assassinated in Iran, allegedly by Israel. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
The assassination comes amid talks for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, which could lead to the release of at least some of the 115 hostages still being held in Gaza. Some analysts said the killing of Haniyeh may further weaken Hamas in Gaza. There was also concern that Iran could respond directly to Israel since Haniyeh was killed in Iran. In April, Iran fired hundreds of missiles directly at Israel, and Iran has used proxies, including the Houthis in Yemen and Hezbollah, to attack the country. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports the man accused of being the main plotter in Al-Qaeda's September 11, 2001 attacks has agreed to plead guilty.
The Defense Department says Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and two accomplices in the 2001 9/11 attack are expected to enter guilty pleas at the military commission at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, as soon as next week. The plea agreement comes more than 16 years after their prosecution began for Al-Qaeda's attack, and more than 20 years after militants flew commandeered commercial airliners into buildings, killing nearly 3,000 people. Defense lawyers have requested that they receive life sentences in exchange for the guilty pleas. The head of one group of families of those killed, Terry Strada, reacted to the news, saying that the men were cowards when they planned the attack, and says they're cowards today. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
And for more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, that is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. The families of some of the 346 people killed in two Boeing MAX jetliner crashes have asked a federal judge to reject a plea agreement Boeing and the U.S. Justice Department have proposed. Instead, the families want the judge to schedule a jury trial for Boeing. The case against Boeing stems from two Boeing 737 MAX crashes in Indonesia in 2018 and in Ethiopia in 2019, and Boeing's misrepresentation about a key software feature involved in both incidents. The decision to accept the deal or put Boeing on trial is now in the hands of a U.S. district judge in Fort Worth, Texas. Vice President Kamala Harris said Wednesday that former President Donald Trump's false assertions about her race were the same old show, as she emphasized the need for black women to organize for his defeat this November.
The American people deserve better. The American people deserve a leader who tells the truth, a leader who does not respond with hostility and anger when confronted with the facts. We deserve a leader who understands that our differences do not divide us. They are an essential source of our strength.
Harris drew chuckles from the audience of a historically black sorority as she mentioned Trump's comments early in the day at the annual meeting of the National Association of Black Journalists. Trump said Harris, the first black woman and Asian American to serve as vice president, had in the past promoted only her Indian heritage. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports a former U.S. Green Beret is under arrest in connection with a plot to remove Venezuela's president.
Jordan Goodreau, the former Green Beret behind a cross-border raid in 2020 to remove Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro with a small cadre of supporters, has been arrested in New York. He and Venezuelan Yaxi Alvarez face 14 criminal counts tied to arms smuggling, according to a federal indictment. Goodreau, a three-time Bronze Star recipient for bravery in Iraq and Afghanistan, claimed responsibility for the amphibious raid by a ragtag group of soldiers who trained in Colombia. In a video, Goodreau said he was protecting Venezuela's democracy after Maduro's 2018 re-election was boycotted by the opposition and condemned by the U.S. Goodreau's lawyer says his client is innocent. Julie Walker, New York.
And for more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, that is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Mpube in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A ceasefire in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo was agreed on Tuesday following talks between the DRC and Rwanda.
The reaction, and according to some of the human rights activists I spoke to, they say this will just serve as a warning and to some of the Guinean authorities who feel that they are above the law and they can just take the law into their own hands and to do whatever they want to do against human beings.
A Guinea court finds former junta leader Moussa Dadis Camara guilty of crimes against humanity.
A health official in the Central African Republic or CAR tells civilians in the central market in the capital Bangui that mpox, also known as monkeypox, is in their midst.
And the Central African Republic declares a monkeypox resurgence and meets with neighbors to stop its spread. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A ceasefire beginning on August 4th in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo was agreed on Tuesday following talks between DRC and Rwanda. The Angola presidency, which has been mediating the talks, said in a statement. The statement did not specify which parties had agreed to the ceasefire, nor how long it would last. Congo accuses Rwanda of backing the M23 rebel group, which Rwanda denies. A spokesperson for the Congolese Foreign Ministry confirmed the ceasefire to Reuters and said it would be of indefinite duration. For more on the significance of the ceasefire, I reached Edgar Githua, an international security and development expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi.
Thank you. I think the ceasefire agreement is a sign of African countries to come up with African solutions, and the DR Congo-Rwanda issue has really been discussed in the continent. So it's a step in the right direction. At least the ceasefire silences the guns and gives people a chance and gives talks a chance, an opportunity to now state their case and to state what demands they are bringing on the table. Because there has been a prolonged back and forth accusation of the DRC saying Rwanda is supporting the M23 rebels, and then Rwanda also saying that they are rebels who operate from the DR Congo, who are stabilizing its country. So this is a step in the right direction. It will give peace a chance, and it will also allow both sides to have a negotiation that gets to the bottom of the issues.
Given the DR Congo's accusations and Rwanda's denials of supporting the M23 rebels, what do you make of the agreement being signed by the two parties?
It is a ceasefire agreement. A ceasefire agreement simply means they have ceased the hostilities, they have stopped fighting. The two respective militaries will now at least not be at each other's necks. They will stop this back and forth. And it gives diplomacy a chance. It gives diplomacy a chance, and it gives peace negotiators a chance to go in and now unravel the very many issues. I know Rwanda, number one, are going to now put on the table the fact that when their military enter DRC, it is because there are rebels, the Interahamwe groups, that it is who are trying to destabilize Rwanda. And I know DRC will keep on saying, in the past we've had Rwandese soldiers. There was a UN report some time back that stated that around 3,000 to 4,000 Rwandese soldiers help M23 in their logistics and fight beside them. So this will be an opportunity for all those now accusations and counter-accusations to be negotiated on, and for people to talk and to get a lasting solution to the problems in the eastern part of Congo.
Are you optimistic about the holding of this ceasefire given the situation in the eastern DR Congo?
As a peace and conflict expert, any small gain that you can get is usually considered as a positive step in the right direction. We just hope that the negotiations, the ceasefire has been signed by the ministers themselves. For me, there will be more surety, or there will be more confidence when it is now moved to the summit level. Now it needs to move. The fact that the ministers have signed this, we now need to see a meeting where the heads of state, the summit, where now the president of DRC Congo, Felix Tshisekedi and the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, sit down and actually sign an agreement. Then we will know we are headed in the right direction. If it remains in the realm of just the ministerial level, there is a probability of it being either broken or other complications arising. But the moment the president puts ink to paper, it means they are seriously looking at negotiating and finding a lasting solution to the issue and to the problem. So,
given that there are other rebel forces in the Eastern DR Congo, will the ceasefire between M23 and help the situation?
It does. I want you to think about it as incrementalism. In incrementalism, we're talking about you make progress step by step. So we begin with the M23 rebels, assuming they can hold this ceasefire.
Edgar Githua is a national security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He spoke with us from Nairobi. Human Rights Watch is accusing Tanzania of forcing indigenous tribes from their ancestral land in the Ngorongoro Conservation Area. In a report released Wednesday, the rights group documents a Tanzanian government program to move 82,000 people off their land to use it for wildlife conservation, tourism, and hunting. The group is calling on Tanzania to restore essential services to the area. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
The Ngorongoro Conservation Area in northern Tanzania is a UN World Heritage Site managed by the Tanzanian government. For centuries, the Maasai tribe has lived in the area side by side with wild animals. In 2022, the government of Tanzania launched a program to encourage the voluntary relocation of the Maasai tribe from the conservation area to Musomera, a town about 600 kilometers away. However, what the government called a voluntary relocation plan was far from voluntary, Human Rights Watch says. Alan Ngari, the group's Africa Advocacy Director, says the forced movement of the people is against the Tanzanian constitution and international law.
There are clear violations, including the Maasai people's rights to consultation, including prior to planning and execution of the relocation, the prohibition of forced evictions, which is happening even for Musomera residents. And then, like I said, their cultural and development has been inhibited. So there's just a general disregard of the obligations by the government that raises serious concerns about prospects of any accountability, justice.
For the 86-page report titled "It Is Like Killing Culture," Human Rights Watch interviewed at least 100 people, including Ngorongoro Conservation Area residents, who were resettled. Community members say they were not informed about the resettlement plans and that consent was not sought. In January, government spokesman Mobhare Mwatinyi said the relocation process was ongoing and on the right track despite some civil societies and others spreading false information. According to local activists, some 8,000 people have been relocated. Ngorongoro is home to more than 80,000 people, but since 2021, residents say the government has reduced the availability of essential services in the area, like water, land for food production, and adequate schools. Local media reports the government has denied reducing such services, but Ngorongoro resident Dennis Oleshangai says authorities are aging them out of their homes.
The government is trying to make the situation uncomfortable, to make them restless, to make the situation hard for the human being to survive by denying them right to access all important places for pasture and water. But the result of that, many people lost their livestock because now they have no enough place to pasture. The situation in schools, you have no any permit to build even a collapsing classroom, build the houses.
Residents also say government employ rangers assault and beat them with impunity and that moving around Ngorongoro has become dangerous. Over the years, the Tanzanian government has developed a plan to set aside more land for tourists, wild animals and game hunting. Authorities argue that though they allow the Maasai to live within national parks, the growth of their population has put them in direct competition with wildlife. Ngari of Human Rights Watch says the government needs to discuss its plan with the affected communities and provide necessities to those still residing in the conservation area.
We are asking for availability and accessibility of basic services. So there needs to be a restoration of funding and resources to the Ngorongoro conservation area. This has been removed by the government.
The New York-based group says the government needs to respect the rights of the indigenous people and ensure their survival, well-being and dignity. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
A Guinea court on Wednesday sentenced former junta leader Musa Dadis Camara to 20 years in prison. This after finding him guilty of crimes against humanity in the 2009 stadium massacre by the military that killed at least 157 people and left dozens of women raped. Camara and seven other high-ranking officials were convicted after a prolonged trial on charges of murder, kidnapping and rape that were reclassified as crimes against humanity on Wednesday. Four accused were acquitted. Camara, now 60 years old, was the ruler of Guinea when more than 150 people were killed during a pro-democracy rally on September 28, 2009. Camara, like the other accused, denied the charges and pleaded not guilty. The judge sentenced him to 20 years in prison. Earlier, I reached reporter Karim Camara, who was at the courthouse in Conakry. So, Karim, what happened at the court?
Well, we were all there, but it was very, very, very serious because security forces were all over around the courtyard. It was something like watertight security. And so there was nobody could be stood to anything. And we were inside the court when this Camara and them ten others that we aligned and they came into the dock and they sat down and waited just to hear from the judge who in short time they will be the verdict against them.
So after the verdict, what was the reaction where you are?
The reaction, according to some of the human rights activists I spoke to, they say this would just serve as a warning. And to some of the Guinean authorities who feel that they are above the law and they can just take the law into their own hands and to do whatever they want to do against human beings. And they also say that the military junta who is now currently in power in Guinea, they say they will see themselves will learn from what has happened to Dadis Camara and others. But other human rights activists, they are also saying that even though the sentences have been rendered against Dadis Camara and others, all they want now is for them to be compensated because they chartered lawyers for the victims and they did lots of expenses, so they want to be paid. So they are also happy that Guinea, for the first time, has been able to put up a case like this and dealt with it properly without any hindrance, because in the past, they say a lot of crimes have been committed since 1958, and that they say this will serve as a deterrent to any one of these Guinean officers who might have an intention to do whatever they can do against human beings.
Do they have a chance of appeal, or this is the end of the whole situation?
Well, it is the beginning of the whole situation, as you say again, because they were given 2 weeks at least to appeal against the sentences. But we don't know now whether this will have the capacity or the money to pay any longer its lawyers and to get it others. Because they have to pay a lot of damages, for people who were raped, they have to pay between $200,000 and $300,000 to each of the raped victims. And those who died, they also have to pay $200,000 to each one of the people who died. And can you imagine, about 150 people, were killed, according to human rights and the organizations, they say they were killed. So each one of these, that has to be paid between $100,000 and $200,000, and also people who got wounded, they say they have to be paid, they have to be compensated, with $150,000. So we don't know where this money is coming from, and the state says it has nothing to pay and isn't going to pay for anybody, and the citizens found guilty of anything, of any offences during the 20th September Stadium massacre. So those who committed it have to pay for it.
That was reporter Karim Camara speaking to us from Guinea-Conakry. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 1st. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Central African Republic officials say they are meeting with the governments of neighboring countries to investigate the origin of monkeypox after declaring a fresh outbreak of the disease. The Central African Republic is concerned the disease could spread after the Democratic Republic of Congo reported more than 12,000 suspected cases and about 500 deaths since January. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A health official in the Central African Republic or CAR tells civilians in the central market in the capital Bangui that mpox, also known as monkeypox, is in their midst. He says the pox outbreak has been confirmed in several towns and villages, with fresh infections reported this week in Bangui. The Central African States officials say scores of suspected cases have also been reported in the bush along the CAR border with Cameroon, Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria, provoking fears that the disease may spread very fast, the officials say. Pierre Somse is the CAR's health minister.
Ministère prie toutes les familles, les chefs de ménage, les leaders de communauté.
Somse says the CAR government is pleading with family heads, community leaders, including traditional rulers and clerics, to inform health officials whenever civilians have symptoms or suffer from fever, muscular aches, sore throat, headache, or have rashes and large boils on their bodies. Somse spoke Wednesday on CAR State TV. He said civilians should avoid contact with wild animals and wash their hands with soap and water after contact with animals and sick people. The Central African State says health workers have been dispatched to towns and villages where confirmed and suspected cases of pox have been reported to transport patients and suspected cases to hospitals. Somse says people infected by the virus will be isolated and treated free of charge in hospitals. Health officials are warning civilians against taking suspected patients to herbalists or African traditional healers. They say the lives of civilians and traditional healers who are in direct contact with patients out of hospitals are at risk. CAR health officials say humanitarian teams are in towns and villages searching for patients hiding in communities due to stigma and the belief that mpox cannot be treated. On Wednesday, CAR government officials said they were coordinating with the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Cameroon, and Chad to jointly fight the disease. Maxime Balalu, CAR communication minister and government spokesperson. He says the CAR alone cannot stop monkeypox spread because it borders with DR Congo, Nigeria, Cameroon, Congo, and Chad are very porous. He says it is difficult for any Central African state to single-handedly control the movement of people, especially cattle ranchers and hunters across the Congo Basin. The Congo Basin is the world's second largest rainforest after the Amazon. The Congo Basin has more than 600 tree species and 10,000 animal species and is shared by Angola, Cameroon, the CAR, DR Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Congo, Burundi, Rwanda, Tanzania, and Zambia. Rwanda and Burundi earlier this year confirmed 5 cases of the highly infectious monkeypox virus in their territories. They said they were investigating the origin of the infections and educating civilians on how to stop contamination. DR Congo, which is struggling to contain a new strain of monkeypox, has recorded about 8,000 pox cases with close to 400 deaths this year, the World Health Organization says. The UN says Europe, Australia and the US are among countries that have reported cases of monkeypox. It says the cases outside Africa were reported in 2022. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Democrats have warned that former President Donald Trump will destroy democratic institutions if he's re-elected to the highest office in the land in November. But Trump has said that democracy will end if he's not re-elected in 2024. VOA's Dora Mekwa explores whether any president has the power to destroy democracy.
The Constitution is America's founding document. It outlines three branches of government: the executive, including the presidency, the legislative, the House of Representatives and the Senate, and the judicial, the Supreme Court and other courts. Each branch is intended to keep the others in check. This separation of powers is at the heart of American democracy. Ronald Chen is a law professor at Rutgers University.
We are navigating somewhat uncharted waters because of the assumed willingness of President Trump, if he were to be reelected, to explore the outer boundaries, including beyond where presidents had gone before.
I only want to be a dictator for one day. And I'm going to be a dictator, Sean, for one day.
Former President Donald Trump says he won't be a dictator beyond day one if he's reelected. But what if a future president did try to exceed his or her power? Here's Chen again.
If the allegation is that one branch is just simply going to run roughshod over the separation of powers, frankly, I don't know if it has yet been determined whether our system is strong enough to withstand that.
He has openly said he will be a dictator on day one.
One of the core campaign messages of likely Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris is that Trump is a threat to democracy. Democrats point to Trump's unwillingness to accept the results of the 2020 election and the subsequent January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol.
Ours is a fight for freedom. Across our nation, we are witnessing a full-on assault on hard-fought, hard-won freedoms and rights.
They keep saying, he's a threat to democracy. I'm saying, what the hell did I do for democracy? Last week, I took a bullet for democracy.
Voters aren't necessarily buying into the argument that U.S. democracy is in peril. Chris Edelson is with American University.
I was talking to somebody a few weeks ago who said, you know, you hear all these things about Donald Trump trying to overthrow democracy, but he didn't do it.
David Ramadan of George Mason University.
There's some sentiment among some of the independent voters that, well, it worked. The system worked, right? The transfer of power did take place, so we're okay.
It's not easy for a populist leader to destroy democracy, according to Kurt Weiland, who studies democracy and authoritarian rule.
Only happens if there's some real institutional weakness and some very special conjunctural opportunity. And so my argument is that in the United States, those conditions really don't apply.
Weiland says a number of factors limit a president from taking complete power, including good actors in public roles. He points to Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, who refused to help overturn the 2020 election when Trump asked him to find extra Trump votes.
American democracy is strong and resilient, and the American people are committed to it, and American office holders are committed to fulfilling their institutional duties.
Weiland says leaders have a better chance of destroying democracy when they have massive popular support, with approval ratings well over 70%. Trump's highest approval rating as president was 49%. Biden's was 57%. Dora McQuarrie, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Thursday, August 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for joining us this morning. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a very great day.